it is. It's basketball. It's not a fucking soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Okay, hello everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Long time since it was just me. We've had interviews with Paul Shirley and Andrew Canyon's been on the program a lot, but today it's just me. We're going through a bunch of topics. They include Brett Brown stepping down as head coach of the Boomers. Didi Luzada returning to the Kings. That happened a while ago, but I'd like to talk about it. Have a quick look at the finals picture. I know that seems ridiculous as we're so far away from not only the finals, but a season, and maybe there won't be one at all. Yanni Wetzel, I'm going to talk about. The Jack Jumpers, the name, a little bit of NBL media and what's going on Twitter. And then also Will Weaver and the rumors to New Orleans, as well as some other signings in with the Hawks. I was going to say Illawarra with the Hawks. And then just a smidgen of NBA talk right at the end. I saw something online that I wanted to talk to you about. But let's start with the biggest news, which is Brett Brown resigned, stepped down, not cut, not sacked, not fired, resigned, stepped down from the Boomers, citing an NBA job uncertainty and also COVID travel worries. That's what's out in all the press releases, which, by the way, it seems like they come from the media. You can sign up to Basketball Australia's press releases and get them right at the first hint of news, or follow Andrew Bogut on Twitter. He's pretty good for that too. What's interesting about this news is it said that he'd handed in his resignation for weeks, so not a lot of people very close to Basketball Australia or the Boomers to see that one leaked. Maybe that's a good thing, but anyway, it opens the door for someone new, and when I say someone new, it's probably some names that we've heard a thousand times for the last couple of years. You've got obviously Trevor Gleeson, Perth Wildcats. Who else? Rob Beveridge, Joey Wright, Brian Gorgian. They're my top four, and probably in that order. I'd maybe switch Beveridge around. Joey Wright, I'd like. Gleeson, it's whether you like that flex offense for the Boomers and the talent they have, or whether Gleeson can change from that. That's an interesting question. Rob Beveridge, has he still got it? He's been out of the game a couple of years now. Joey Wright, is he too combustible? Brian Gorgian, has he still got it? Or has he kind of had his time? He was once Boomers coach. Now he's not anymore. He's just come back to Australia. Is the time right? You know, all four of them would make fabulous candidates. And then you've got outside the country, of course. The big name being thrown around makes sense. He's the assistant. Last coach to actually coach the Boomers in that game against New Zealand in Brisbane. Will Weaver, of course. I think he's going to get it. I can just fucking tell. I can see the press conference already with Weaver.
We're excited. You know, our players are going to go out there and we hope to have a good campaign.
Wow, you know how it goes. They say that curls get the girls, but it also appears that, it appears that curls not only get you the girls, but also the run of Australian basketball. So, fair play to Will Weaver. We'll see what happens, though. Question I kind of have is, did Brett Brown lose his cachet with the quote-unquote NBA Boomers after losing the 76ers job? Who's to know? Basketball Australia and that Boomers team, boy, they are tightly wound, tighter than a snare drum. They do not like to talk. Let's jump on to something else. Didi Luzada has returned to the Kings on that second year of that Next Star deal. 22 years old, 21 turning 22. Looking at his NBL 20 stats, played in 20 games of a possible 34, started 15 of those 20 games he played in, 22 minutes per game, 40% from the field, 33% from the outside, 1.35 turnovers, 2.2 per 36 minutes, so that's quite high, 9.85 points per game. Good stats, but they don't jump off the page. In the finals, here's a stat you want to look at. In the finals, points per game dropped to 8.5. So that's down from 9.85 down to 8.5. It's only a point, but it's a drop of 1.3. It's a 10% drop. That's GST. That means something. And the percentages, of course, as well, dropped down from 40 down to 37.5. Not a huge drop, but a drop nonetheless. Back and knee injuries throughout the whole season kept him out of those, 14 games. It's a lot of games to miss. Didi is a good player, but he, for me, highlights a fatal flaw in the Next Stars program. And in a word, it's servitude. Or servitude is a better way to say it. If Luzada gets as much as a scratch, his NBL team, the Pelicans, will shut him down. And are the Kings going to give pushback? if he gets an injury and the NBA think about it, are they going to tap the Kings on the shoulder and says he sits? What if the Kings staff are like, actually, he just needs to take a Panadol and he's good? Are the likes of Will Weaver and such going to stand up to, is it Langdon? Trajan Langdon? I don't know how to pronounce his name. But are they going to say, sorry, Mr. Langdon, but we the Kings are trying to win the John Rashke Cup and we're going to play Didi. We're going to make him play through it, or we don't think he's as hurt as you think. And I think Mr. Langdon's response is going to be, I'm sorry, what the did you just say to me? I don't think so. And I don't think there's going to be a lot of pushback. Fatal flaw of the Next Starts program. When you take that into consideration and then you couple it with the Kings' naturally cautious approach to injury and postmodern approach to load management, you get a trepidatious situation. With no Deshaun Taylor and no Kevin Lish, production and dependability, they're going to need production and dependability out of this 84-kilogram, 6'5", 21, 22-year-old. It becomes paramount. Is he capable of it? That's a question we're going to see if and when NBL 21 starts up. I want to put out a theory. If Andrew Bogut doesn't return and this team whiffs on its second import, are they in a quote-unquote rebuilding phase as best as that exists in the NBL? You've got Vasiljevic, 23 years old, Didi Luzada, 22 years old, Angus Glover, 22 years old, Jordan Hunter, 23 years old. I think here's a guy who's got a real chance in the absence of Bogut, presumably for either the whole season or half of it. Yeah, he's going to have to step up. He's going to have to be able to play in more than the 73 total minutes he played in NBL 20. The Kings are set to lose three of its best five players. Tate doesn't look like he's returning. Andrew Bogut is questionable. And Kevin Lish is definitely gone. That's definitely two of their best three. Two of their starting five at key positions, mind you. My answer to that question of are they in a rebuilding phase would be yes if they didn't have Casper Ware. Can Casper Ware drag a team into the finals by himself if he's the star import? We're about to see. He's going to have to improve. The Kings better work out a way to up Ware's percentages because they're going to need that. And the question I had also with Luzada is it a success for the Next Stars program that Didi is returning for the second year? Brings into question, what is the primary objective of the Next Stars program? Is it to get players to the NBA? Or is it to bring players and mature them more in the NBL? Is the program for the NBA's glory or the NBL's? Interesting. I want to have a quick look at the finals picture. We've just spoken about Sydney. And really, you know, with this NBL coverage, you're trying to slim it down to the simplest question and conversation. And for me, that can be done as the top four teams, Sydney, Perth, Cairns, Melbourne. When you talk about what teams are going to move up and down, and you know maybe the bottom, maybe the bottom five shift around, but is anyone going to actually come into that top four? And I've got asterisks next to Sydney, Cairns, and Melbourne. I think Perth is safe because Cotton could or should naturalise, and that is their finals retention trump card or cheat code even when that happens. Basically means they get three imports. So I think they're going to be okay, even if they don't have that happen. I think they've got a good roster. But you look at Sydney, Bogut and Tate, Lish are gone. Cairns, neither Machado nor Oliver have signed. And then Melbourne, you've got McCarron now stepping into a role he's new to, maybe not uncomfortable with, but certainly new to. Chris Golding, a year older at 31, turning 32, entering, you know, the decline, the typical age bracket of the decline of a player. Will it be a steep one? Will it be a graceful decline? Questions. But they haven't got a single import on their books. Very, you know, there where I see the movement. But that's a long way down the road. Let's move on. Yanni Wetzel returns to the NBL via the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, which is great. A big man who migrated to basketball from tennis, always a good condition of talent, the sort of Chris Anstey mold. After this news was dropped by Felix von Hoff, I came up with a nickname for him. Forget the Woj Bomb. Think the Moller-Hoff cocktail. I'm quite proud of that. Hopefully that gets some traction. Hashtag Molohoff cocktail. The Jack Jumpers. I wanted to talk to you about this. The road to the Jack Jumpers. And the naming of the team. I like the name. I like the name before it was given. I'm glad it superseded Tridents. I thought Tridents was not only generic, but also too phallic for me. But the naming of this team really brought up for me, like, and this is I'm speaking to NBL fans, and I'm about to kind of slag you off, but how low can NBL fans stoop? I mean, this name was decided upon, people didn't like it, and they just rubbished the team and the league and the initiative to expand to Tasmania. Like, everything just got thrown in the bin. And I liked the theatre around eliminating a name a week. It was great for social media traction. I think, you know, there was those negative tweets from Chris Anstey, Andrew Bogut. I wasn't a fan of those. I think I was in a rare position because, thankfully, about a week or so before the announcement of the Jack Jumpers, I think it was maybe the week before they did that, I'd luckily seen David Attenborough's Tasmania, so I knew about the Jack Jumper ant. P.S., it's poisonous enough to kill a human, you know. It's a fun fact for the day. Then when it was named and I saw the hype video and how far that thing was leaning towards kids, fresh from the Council of Sports, friend of the program, great guy, he compared that video to Ben 10, which I thought was pretty accurate. It was aimed at kids, and I just thought any criticisms, even the small ones I had of the name after watching that, were gone, and I felt bad for not only any criticisms I had, but criticisms people have made, because, you know, it's just aimed at kids, and to be negative about the name, it just made you look like a bully and a bell end. It's like criticizing as a kid's show for being unrealistic. Yeah, I think if people could have their time again, they'd do things differently. Jumping on, NBL Media. I got to check this out. And I'm quickly going to the NBL's Twitter account. Bear with me while this loads up. But this kind of sums up the whole thing. I think it was earlier today, the NBL put out, yep, here it is, put out a video. On this day in 2018, Andrew Bogut made his NBL debut with the Sydney Kings. It has 55 likes. Going through it, one of them is Jaron Collins, former NBA player. A whole bunch of people going through. I'm sure many of you listening have liked it. Sydney Kings liked it. Dan Ewing liked it. Good guy. Didi Luzeda liked it, but no Andrew Bogut. And I just thought that sums the whole damn thing up. And Andrew Bogut's been active on Twitter since it's gone up. It's quintessential NBL and Bogut. I like Darren Barker and I like Guy Neville at NBL Media, among with the other guys who churn out stuff out there. And they churn out a lot of great stuff. Not just underappreciated, but totally unappreciated. Classic. Let's jump on. Will Weaver to New Orleans, these rumors. Major quote coming from Brian Windhorst. If you're an NBA fan, then you know the name. And he writes or said on a podcast, they sent him, Luzeda, down to Sydney partially due to a connection between, again, Langdon, the assistant GM under Griffin at the Pelicans, and Will Weaver. More on this is at a website called thebirdrights.com. They also mentioned that former NBL import Jamal Mosley is a consideration for the role. And they go on to clarify that by saying, in that Mosley, he is someone who is extremely popular with players. He is Luka's go-to guy. Mosley works with the Dallas Mavericks. What's funny about these quotes is here I was thinking that the primary prerequisite for being an NBA coach, an NBA head coach, should be coaching teams well. You know, coaching teams to wins that they are either unlikely or overmatched in, unlikely to win or overmatched in. Strategizing, not fraternizing. But then again, what would I know? Let's look at some signings. The Hawks. Akolda Gak, 6'11", power forward center, signs as a DP with the Hawks on a 3-year deal. Three-star prospect, 170th ranked in the class of 2021. Young kid, would be doing his, what, senior year? I don't know if that's American high school senior year or Australian senior year. Seems like over there. Three-year deal, which sees him become a contracted roster player next season, which I thought was a really interesting little tidbit of the deal. Will he contribute to winning NBL basketball? Probably not. But looking at it broadly, I feel bad for this kid. Passing up on that cultural experience of playing at, say, the University of Miami, like where his brother Deng plays. I just think I'd rather be an Australian kid playing basketball at the University of Miami or akin than deep off the bench in Wollongong. You know, I just think that'd be a lot more fun and you'd get a lot more attention and court time and be a part of the game more. But, you know, fair play to him and good luck to him in Wollongong. That's really all we've got on the NBL. We are at only 15 minutes. I mean, that's the kind of off-season it's been. But before I go, I want to talk to you quickly about the NBA. Lakers have won the championship. And if you follow me on Twitter, you would have seen I've been doing a bunch of reports for video reports for people for what they're worth. Genie Bus. This is something I saw on ESPN Lakers, Los Lakers. First female owner to win an NBA championship. That was the headline from ESPN Los Angeles about Jeannie Buss and their 17th world championship. And she was put up as this sort of champion of the gender, which is great. You know, there's no doubt about it. That headline is correct. She is the first female owner to win an NBA championship. But let's just dissect this just a wee bit more. You know, I think people were kind of like, Jeannie, how did you do it? You know, you're a champion. And, you know, the answer to the question of how did you do it? It's, oh, yeah, you inherited the team from your late father, net worth $600 million. Then you ran it into the ground or in collaboration with people, ran it into the ground for the best part of a decade before shit-canning your brother and then signing LeBron James, the finals cheat code, and all the while having banging Phil Jackson. There I said it. And I just thought, you know, before she's, you know, the first woman to win an NBA championship, she's also the daughter of the owner of the team and a guy who got in at the ground level of the NBA and rode on the back of some great players. But what it looks like is the NBA, and more broadly, I think you could throw the whole blanket over sports, is becoming more and more nepotistic and in-house than any profession in the world. Sports becoming more of a boys' club than whites in London. Google it. Look at how many coaches, players, and owners are either former players or the sons or daughters of former players or owners. It is a very, very small and a very, very exclusive fraternity. The NBA ratings were down 48% this finals. That's primarily due to it being played at the same time as NFL, MLB, and NHL. That's never happened before. The idea that fans are switching due to the overtly or overly political nature of the players is a cute theory. And it's an explosive one, but one that no one could really accurately prove. Maybe a few polls are out there. And I think it's something that someone thought of and thought, oh, yeah, I'll say that. And people have picked up and run with it. But if you looked at data, I think the far more likely, far more reasonable outcome or explanation or rationale is that for the first time in the NBA Finals history, it's been played at the same time as three other major American sports that have all, you know, started with a bang. NFL started with a bang, and MLB and NHL were, well, NHL was in the Stanley Cup, and MLB was edging towards the playoffs, if not in it, or finals, whatever they call it. So, however, looking at those ratings, I would agree that the NBA has become insular. It's all of it, and we talked about this, but you know, all of its media are former players. You know, you look at the three biggest names commenting on the NBA: Zach Lowe, who has nothing to do with the telecast; Bill Simmons, who has nothing to do with the telecast; and then, you know, take your pick of sort of Nate Duncan, John Hollinger, Ryan Russillo. You know, these are all guys who people have a huge following, and none of them are part of the TV broadcast. You know, they're the best guys to follow they're the best lens to follow the NBA through, and they either write, do their own stuff on YouTube, or do podcasts like this very podcast. So I think when you take a look at that, you know, would people want to hear Bill Simmons, or would people want to hear Mark Jackson? Would people want to hear Zach Lowe, or would they want to hear Paul Pierce or Kendrick Perkins? There's no reason why they can't hear both, is another fair answer to that question. But more on this at another time. I've actually been thinking about broadening the podcast outside of the NBL to the NBA, just because, the NBL is a pretty small circle when it boils down to it. But that's something more for another day. Guys, that's all I have for you. It is, we're 20 minutes in. A reminder, NBL Pocket Podcast Patreon. I've got some articles going up there about the fabulous and very sentimental and now sort of hyperbolic Boomers win over Team USA in August of 2019. I've got a little bit coming on about media days and Sydney Kings and the NBL at large. So that's the NBL Pocket Podcast Patreon. That's a bit of fun. Follow me on Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod. Rate and review this program if you've liked it. And hopefully in the future, get some guests on here. See what happens. The other thing as well, if you're looking, we're coming towards Christmas. A lot of the country's still in lockdown. Not a huge amount of things to go to or do or see. So if you're looking to escape into a good book, which is a great place to go, do so via Booktopia and via the link in the description. I think I get about 7 or 10% of the sales. And, you know, that makes me feel good. Makes me feel like a big man. Appreciate it. And see you in the future. Ciao.